holding the line
for the conservative movement.
This is Stacey on the Right on Sirius XM Patriot 125.
You're sampling the best, better than all the rest, better than anyone I've ever met. I'm stuck on your heart.
Oh, pardon me. I was just jamming out a little bit to our girl Tina. Her music never, ever stops being good. It's just the best. It's the best bumper music you've ever had on the best show you ever listened to at night. Welcome to the program. Find me at StaceyOnTheRight.com, StaceyOnTheRight everywhere. Welcoming in. This is really great. Usually I interview people just dozens of times, sometimes for years and years and years, and then I'll finally meet them at a conference or something and share a meal, or we'll bump into each other at some place an event. And I'll say, oh, hi. And it's like putting a face to the name, even though I know what they look like because I've never met them in person before, but I've talked to them ages and ages and days. Well, this is the reverse of that. I've already had dinner with Patrick. Like, we literally sat down and had food and drank drinks and just chatted and enjoyed it and lived our best lives here in my town in St. Louis at a fancy little restaurant that I actually don't go there a ton. And so it was super cool. And now we get to meet on the radio Patrick M. Brenner, president of the Southwest Public Policy Institute, at PM Brenner 91. Hey, thanks for coming on.
Stacey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today. And like you said, I appreciated the fact that we actually got dinner before you had me on as a guest. So thank you so much for having me.
It's a great way to intro.
Dinner.
It was. Lots of laughing, really stimulating conversation from the other two members of our party. And then one of them had his wife swing by and we got to chat with her. So it was just great all around.
It was fun. It was fun. We should do it again soon. But next time, let's do it in Albuquerque.
Maybe you'll get your car stolen
while you're here.
Well, it would be a rental car. You know what I mean? Like, I would, I probably would just Uber, and then there's no chance of a car theft. But I did think when we were sitting and you were sharing what you do at your organization, of course, we immediately landed on the fact that we should have conversations here, and especially to discuss this subject from tonight. I'm really excited because I don't think this topic gets enough discussion time on air, in circles where it's important. And Americans may not even be aware that there's an issue that they might need to be informed on and possibly, contact their legislator about. So I wanted to just talk about this. It's rate cap. So it doesn't sound so exciting at the very outset, but this impacts all of us because this has to do with all kinds of borrowers, even people who might be considered to be not the most desirable types of borrowers, but everyone borrows money. So it's really not about whether or not you're desirable. It's about whether or not you have access.
Right, right. And what we've found in our studies on rate caps is that instituting rate caps at the state level actually decreases consumer access to credit. Now, Stacey, I'm a well-qualified borrower. I had a pretty good credit score before I started this project. So I was well into the 800s. My wife and I both carry a mortgage jointly. I have a car payment that I make with a credit union, and I make that payment religiously every month. I, by all definitions, am a well-qualified borrower. I'm not overextended. My debt-to-income ratio is fine. But as soon as interest rate caps went into effect, what that did in New Mexico was that eliminated consumer access to short-term specialized emergency loans. What is a short-term specialized emergency loan? I think we should answer that question first. Mm-hmm. It's a loan that is typically between $200 and $1,000, and they're typically borrowed for anywhere between 4 and 8 months. Generally, those are the averages. We spoke with some of the industry participants, and one of our industry participants reported that their average duration of loan is about 111 days from origination to payoff. So borrowing $500 loans, these are small loans. They're $500 borrowed for 6 months and generally just paid back without any incident. What we had in New Mexico was a crusade by well-to-do well-intentioned activists. They're out there proclaiming that they're trying to protect the consumer. But what we've got is the the bad consequence, the unintended consequences of policy being implemented at the state level. And that unintended consequence is the destruction of consumer access to these specialized emergency loans. The interest rate cap went into effect earlier this year in January. And as soon as that interest rate cap went into effect, we immediately saw a reduction in the number of lenders that were participating in the space. Credit dried up. And at a time where inflation is through the roof, at a time when economic uncertainty is just over the horizon, when families are stretched to the max and finances are stressful, are stressing families, families need access to credit now more than ever before. And they don't have it in New Mexico. And they don't have it in Illinois. And South Carolina just tried the same thing, and we dodged a bullet on that one. But they're going to bring it up again in January during the next legislative session. So this cancer of rate caps is spreading across the country, and it's not good for consumers. It's destroying consumer choice in the credit and lending space.
So the thing that you're describing is something like if you're a well-qualified borrower, you wouldn't be thinking about borrowing $400 or $500 for 111 days. But that's not really the point here. The point isn't that some Americans don't need this service. It's that just like everything else in the free market, you know, water runs to the lowest point. We have every kind of borrower. We have every kind of lender. And the rate caps actually limit access for people who need it. And so the idea here is we should all oppose limitations on access to whether it's credit or access to borrowing, whatever it is. In a free market system, we want to encourage diversity of offerings as opposed to government top-down interventions. That's what it sounds like has happened there is you have government interventions top-down. It ignores the consumer, gets in between the relationship of the lender and the potential borrower. But the worst of it is you describe the activists who are implementing this as people who they don't even understand the market they're impacting.
That's right. You couldn't have said it better. You've got advocates in this space that are advocating for price controls on a product that when those price controls become implemented, you're forcing supply out of the marketplace. And when you force supply out of the marketplace, costs go up, supply decreases. You've got a shift in the supply curve, and now we've got no access. These people, I'm sorry, let me take a step back. Let's talk about the demographic that typically borrows these types of loans. In the Albuquerque metropolitan area, a huge portion of the population, relatively speaking, we're talking about double-digit percentage points. A huge portion of the population is considered unbanked or underbanked. They do not have access to traditional financial institutions like banks or credit unions. Instead, either by choice or either because they're not qualified to borrow money from the traditional institutions, they are borrowing money from these traditional installment lenders, these specialized emergency lenders that are offering the $500 loans with a 6-month repayment period. That is where they're going. And more often than not, it's by choice. They choose to do business with these specialized emergency lenders instead of going to a bank. And Stacey, I'm going to be honest, the transparency that I've seen from the short-term lending industry is actually better than the transparency I've seen from big banks like U.S. Bank and Bank of America and Wells Fargo in this process. What I had to do in order to, again, let me take a step back. What was the project? The project was now that we've got short-term lending drying up in New Mexico, what's happening? What is happening with the marketplace? In January, Pew Charitable Trusts out of Pennsylvania, they're a left-of-center think tank, they came out with a report identifying that 6 of the 8 largest banks in the country were now offering an affordable, quote unquote, short-term loan in place of these traditional short-term lenders. Those banks consisted of U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America. Those were 3 of those 6 banks had branches in New Mexico. So we selected those 3 banks, and I actually read the Pew Charitable Trust report, and then I tried to apply for the loan from U.S. Bank Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. And in this process, we try to emulate the consumer experience, which is not something that people usually do in this space. There's no need to do it until now. But now that you've got these banks that are purportedly offering this new type of credit in a way that is what we've been led to believe is quick, it's easy, it's affordable, I tried. And it was an awful experience. I had to walk into a Wells Fargo branch. I had to try to apply for a checking account. They told me I had to set an appointment and come back the next day because that was the first appointment that I could set. I came back. I was told by a banker that somebody else had come in as a walk-in and taken my appointment time, so I had to wait another 15 minutes before I could speak to a banker.
Wow.
And this was just to open a checking account, right? And having an open checking account was the requirement before I could even apply for the loan. So you have to have an open checking account. You have to have recurring direct deposits. And then once you've established those two criteria with the bank, then they'll consider an application from you. So I was rejected by all three of those banks because of these onerous lending criteria that they've established in lieu of actually pulling a hard credit report on my credit.
Mm. So and this was tough for you, and you have good credit.
Right, right. My credits, when I first started the project, my credit score was over 800. Now, here's the kicker. So that was the first report. That was we released it under the title No Loan for You. You can find out more about that at southwestpolicy.com/No Loan for You Report or something like that. I have to change that. But you can find it on our website, No Loan for You. I hope you got the Seinfeld reference. Mm-hmm. It took me a minute.
No soup for you.
Soup Nazi mm-hmm. Seinfeld reference.
Yep,
yes.
yep.
No loan for you.
Right. Nothing. You get nothing. You leave hungry.
Right. After we released this report, Pew Charitable Trusts doubled down and said, oh, now the credit unions are offering this special type of credit. And we challenged that too. I mean, over the course of 3-4-ish weeks, I applied at 14 different credit unions. And I tried to get a $500 loan. And I was only approved by two. One was a credit union where I already had an existing membership. And I hadn't, this is the credit union that I was talking about earlier, the one that I have an auto loan with, that I've been paying for over a year with religious fervor. I never miss a payment. Because I've already established a borrowing history with this credit union, they were more receptive to me requesting a small dollar short-term loan. But what about the other 12? Well, one of them gave me like a pre-approval, but that pre-approval was contingent on me actually going out and creating a savings account, putting $5 in, and applying for the application normally. Now, the difference between the credit union applications and the bank applications is that the credit union applications resulted in a hard credit inquiry. I saw my credit score drop by over 100 points in the 3-week time frame where I was trying to apply for one of these short-term loans from the credit unions. And Pew Charitable Trust would have you believe that the credit unions are actually more receptive to consumers than the banks. And my experience was the exact opposite, except for where I was already an existing customer.
So the only place you were able to get a short-term loan was a place where you already had an existing relationship and a proven track record of paying well. How does that reality compare with the typical borrower who's in the short-term loan, small-dollar loan space that's looking for, you know, this help for 111 days, let's say?
Stacey, that is a great question. I am so glad that you asked it. We actually already touched on it very briefly earlier in the conversation when we talked about unbanked and underbanked members of the population in the Albuquerque metropolitan area. These are people that don't have access to traditional credit or traditional financial institutions, whether it be a large bank, a national bank, a regional bank, or a local credit union. They do not have access to a traditional banking institution. So when Pew Charitable Trust is saying, oh, well, we advocated for the passage of rate caps to protect you so that you don't get suckered into quote-unquote predatory lending. I can't stand that term. It is so erroneous. It's not predatory at all. customers know what they're borrowing. They know the type of product that they're buying. There's been so much research done on that. They're well-informed borrowers. But Pew Charitable Trusts would have them believe that we're looking out for your best interests. Pew Charitable Trusts, we're trying to protect you by instituting and advocating for these rate caps, when in reality, those rate caps actually decrease access to credit. And then Pew Charitable Trusts has the tenacity to say, oh, well, look, some of these banks out there are actually now offering this new type of credit. And some of these credit unions out there, some other organizations have built NAPs. You can just get this type of credit from the credit union. You'll be okay. Trust us. Well, Pew Charitable Trusts, you couldn't have been more wrong. And I actually went to those institutions and I tried to borrow that money. I tried to emulate the consumer that Pew Charitable Trusts claims to advocate on behalf of. But I would bet you $5 right now, Stacey, I will bet you $5 that Alex Horowitz has never applied for a short-term loan. And Fred Nathan with Think New Mexico, the advocacy group in New Mexico that was advocating for the passage of the interest rate cap, I would bet you $5 that Fred Nathan has never applied for a short-term loan either. So to advocate for passage of policy that would impact consumers without attempting to even emulate the consumer experience, that's wrong. That's wrong, Stacey, and I know you agree with me.
I do. But it's to me, it's like the worst kind of meddling, because it's people who don't understand the realities of that lending environment where the consumer, as you noted, is very well informed. And so it seems to, like, if you're an outsider and you have great credit and, you know, you're generationally middle class, meaning, you know, you don't have a lot of that kind of experience in your family, your immediate family, your parents were good borrowers and your, you know, grandparents were good borrowers. You have been trained well, taught well about money. You're a good borrower. You don't understand that. And so instead of tackling some other issue that's closer to home, like, you know, trash collection or whether or not your school district is allocating the resources properly of your property tax, they decide they want to stop so-called predatory lending. Predatory lending, in order for that term to be correct, the person who's doing the borrowing would have to be unaware of the interest rate, the repayment terms, and the other options that are available. Only it turns out there aren't a lot of options available for people who aren't prime borrowers. And that's what you're talking about. The situation where you live is you are a prime borrower. And I don't mean like, you know, New Mexico. I mean, your lived experiences, because of good decision making and discipline, you are a good borrower. You're a good credit risk. And so you don't have to borrow small dollar amounts.
I take that as a compliment.
Well, it is. It's a great thing. And it's what parents want for their kids. And it's what, you know, grandparents want for their grandkids. It's a good thing. But they're not everyone is in that situation. It's the same situation with people who are good drivers and they don't have tickets. They don't have points off their license. Take any situation. People who are thin, physically fit, they make the right choices when they're eating. They stop before they're full. You know, all that stuff. They exercise. They get a lot of sleep. These are great decisions. They help you stay thin. So in all of those situations, you have people who are doing the right thing and reaping the benefits of that. And then you have people who aren't doing the right thing. And so because of their negative behaviors, they have a different borrowing profile in this case. And so who is it who gives the right to, you know, a person who has a great borrowing profile to limit access and options for people who don't have it? So it sounds like we're advocating for people who have bad borrowing profiles to have these, you know, their interest rates are higher, the terms are not as good. But if there is no one else who's willing to lend, then what right do you and I have to judge the circumstances that these people are borrowing under? Because, you know, usually the statistics show that the majority of Americans who are in that borrowing profile move out of it, they make better choices, and they eventually become good, better, or even best borrowers like yourself. So it's a judgment call, right? Oh, we can't let these people borrow money now. Well, how are they ever going to move up if they can't borrow any money? It's just, it's crazy.
Stacey, that is such a great point. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Something that is so missing from this conversation from the opposition of the short-term credit industry is that the short-term lenders are actually preparing these people to be better borrowers and future customers of the big banks and the credit unions. They are doing the customer, they're a feeder system, essentially. They're a lead mm-hmm. generation service.
Yep.
As they prepare these customers with better borrowing practices and then hand them off to the credit unions or the big banks. I mean, they're providing a valuable service in so many different ways. One is the actual product itself, and then two is the borrowing, is creating and establishing good borrowing habits for the people that borrow these types of acquire these types of financial products. Mm-hmm. They're being prepared to transition from a, sorry, I got to be careful with that word these days, right, Stacey? Transition.
Well,
we don't want to talk
you know,
about
with,
that right now.
With me, I understand what you mean, but it could mean other things for people who, you know, think of in that way. But I get you.
Right. Transition from short-term borrowing into a traditional financial institution. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not the case with every single borrower that borrows a short-term specialized emergency loan. We know that. But more often than not, you're preparing these customers for a better financial future. And what the advocates have done with their feel-good legislation and their feel-good advocacy is they have made it illegal for subprime borrowers to borrow money. That is the reality. They have made it illegal for subprime borrowers to borrow money.
And then after that, they just leave them. So once they've gotten their rate caps, they go on into the sunset, go back to their box wine and $900 purses and, you know, three vacations a year. And all that's fine. I don't care what people do or how they vacation, but I'm just giving those descriptors to describe how completely out of touch these people are with the ones who their activism actually impacts. And so, you know, I believe in the freedom, not just the free market, but freedom of choice for individuals. If you go to make a short-term loan, you need to borrow money, $500, you need to borrow it for, you know, 90 days. And you go to the lender, the short-term lender, and you look at the terms and you don't like them, then you can leave, right? If you feel like you can get a better deal at your credit union, you go to the credit union and go through their process and you either get a loan or you don't. Maybe you go there and you go through the process and you get the loan, but then you think, okay, well, you know, this works, and you borrow that money and that's the end of it. Maybe you go and you get denied and then you realize, okay, so these terms over here that I didn't love so much, that's my option. If I need this money, I need to borrow on those terms. And if the terms are changed drastically or radically altered through rate caps or other activism, that means that short-term lender probably won't offer that product anymore, because that's their choice, is to offer the product and for a price that guarantees they'll get their money back or increases the likelihood and also makes it profitable for them, because they're basically interacting with a riskier borrower. So as with most problems that we face in America today, the simplest solution is not always the best, because the simplest solution often doesn't take into consideration all of the other ramifications that you've been describing here. When you did this experiment, you literally went out and put your credit score, you know, out there and did the research to figure out, how does this really work? It turns out it doesn't work unless you have a really great borrowing profile.
Right, right. And I was one of the lucky ones. I had an established history with, I'm going to name them. They did a really great job on this, and I'm going to give them props. It's Nucenda Credit Union. They have several locations across the Albuquerque metropolitan area and across the state of New Mexico. Their actual short-term lending product is awesome. It was easy to find within my profile, online banking. It was easy to apply. I was able to set the amount that I wanted to borrow. I was able to set the repayment term, and I instantly had access to that liquidity. I instantly had access to that cash as soon as I clicked the submit button. And it was all fairly reasonably priced. But that's an exception to the rule. I applied for this type of credit from 14 other credit unions. I'm sorry, 14 in total, 13 other credit unions. And of those 13 other credit unions, I only had one other conditional approval. The other thing that I didn't mention is that I was already a member of two of those credit unions. They just don't offer this type of loan product.
Wow. But the bigger deal is, after all of those applications, you have in your process lost 100 points off your credit score, which in your case, because you were well into the 800s, that means you're well into the 700s. That's still a good borrowing profile. So you know, a little bit higher interest rate than if you're in the 800s, which is excellent, but good. Still, you can still go out if you need to buy a car.
I'll
need to
refinance your mortgage. It'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll recover. But even if you need to do something in June, if you need to do something this month, you're not so negatively impacted that you can't borrow this month because you had the room within your credit profile to do that. But if you have, let's say, a 580 and you go around trying to find this short-term borrowing opportunity and you lose 100 points, you're now not borrowing anymore. You just, 480 is not, you're not getting anybody to say yes to you at 480. That's considered bad credit. High risk,
right.
No borrowing opportunities. And 580 is really, that's not good, but you can still get a loan. It's just the interest rate's going to be much, much higher. So I think the lesson here is, as always, just so beautifully demonstrated because you took the time to actually do the experiment, you ran it yourself all the way through to its conclusion, is that activism by people who are not close to the target usually results in less access and a worse situation for those who are closest to the impact zone of the activism. And I think, I mean, it's a real lesson. I hope that the people who are most involved in rate caps, that not just that they listen to this interview, but that they read the work that you've done and the writing that you've done over at AmericanBanker.com. Also, and these are linked at the show notes, at Santa Fe, NewMexican.com. All of these are linked. You can find them. SouthwestPolicy.com, No Loan for You. That's the report detailing everything that Patrick went through in his detailed, it was like an adventure he went on. And he's now lived to tell
and
another
we're
day.
Actually in the middle of No Loan for You 2, T-O-O. Mm-hmm. There's another pun in there somewhere. You just got to find it. he who would pun would pick a pocket. So No Loan for You 2, we're working on that one. And that one should be getting published here within the next week or so. We're putting the finishing touches on that. But that one will address our experience with the actual credit unions. We've been following Pew Charitable Trusts as they've set the stage. They set the stage earlier this year in January with the six big banks, and they set the stage again with the credit unions just a couple of months ago. And we're just following suit, and anything I can do to prove Pew Charitable Trusts wrong, we will. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we've entirely proven them wrong. We've found the one success story, but it took me 3 weeks and 12 other applications in order to find it.
Yeah, and usually if someone's looking to borrow $500 for a short-term loan, they're needing
it
within
tomorrow.
Right, they need it. And these are not people who have big resources in the family arena, because a lot of people who have a good borrowing profile also have extensive connections with their family where they can call a grandmother, text their mom, reach out to their sister or their brother or their brother-in-law. They have a few people they can go to and cobble together. And usually, for a person with a good borrowing profile, they wouldn't borrow $500 for anything. They're looking to borrow $10,000, and they can, throw in with family to get it. So this is just, it's two different worlds. And there's nothing wrong with not understanding the one world if you're in the other one. But for goodness sake, stay out of it with your activism, because it only hurts the people who are, as you mentioned, trying to go up from one area of the socioeconomic rungs, that area of the ladder. They're trying to claw their way up to the next level where they wouldn't think of borrowing $500, because now they've got a short-term savings and they've got some money in the bank. And if they need to borrow money, it's for a much bigger purpose, and it's not a need, it's a want. This is the progression that people go through, the dumb 20s, the slightly smarter 30s, and it's like a revelation in the 40s. It's like someone opens your brain up and puts an actual brain in there. You get a real brain in the 40s, and you're like, man, I could do so many things. And then by the 50s, you're like, I'm rocking it. Thank you. Don't need any help. Don't need any borrowing. I don't need to borrow from anybody except the bank. These things happen. And they happen on a different scale. Some people are rocking it in their 20s. But the point is, we need to stay out of it if we don't understand it. And that's the worst with the wine box crowd. They just want to be activists. And these rate caps really hurt families that are trying to get up another level. And we need to put a stop to it.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. Two more things. One that I want. You mentioned the wine box crowd. One of the chief activists in New Mexico that was advocating on behalf of rate caps, that was advocating for the rate caps to be implemented. The guy makes over $100,000 a year. Do you think that fellow would ever need to borrow a short-term loan?
Well, I mean, I would hope not, but anything's possible. He could have a gambling issue or something like that.
Sure, sure.
Probably not.
All of the indications point to the implication that he is likely a well-qualified borrower. He's well off. He probably doesn't even need to borrow money. But you've got that guy. That guy is the chief advocate for the rate caps. He's the one that's telling a family that's making $40,000 that they should not be allowed to borrow a $500 loan to fix their car. He's the one that's telling the starving college student that they should not be allowed to borrow cash so that they can make vehicle repairs so that they can get to class and take their final exam. That's his doing. And all of the other people in that camp who will likely never have to walk into a short. Well, let's hope that they're not ever in a precarious financial position.
Yeah, because now that they've gotten the rate caps, they won't be able to get anything because if their borrowing profile is compromised, they fixed it now so that they can't get any help. That's what they've done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I was so looking forward to our chat. You've given so much information, and there's even more in the articles. Bank Think, if I can't get an emergency loan from a bank, it's not clear who possibly can. And here's what rate caps really do to consumers. Both of these stories are over at the show notes at stacyontheright.com. I so appreciate you, Patrick and Brenner, president of the Southwest Public Policy Institute. The website is southwestpolicy.com. Thank you for coming on.
Stacy. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. We'll talk again soon. Yes, absolutely. Dinner. Yes. And also, you'll have to join us on the show to keep us abreast of the part two on this. We want to hear. All right. We'll be back with more Stacy on the Right after this, 866-957-2874.